The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly, terribly named podcast series. But the QA, SGGQA, that's the important part because we like to make this an interactive conversation, talk about the top tech news stories. It's why I like to host my podcast on a Monday, so that we can kind of get into the week, sort out our feels, maybe some news broke over the weekend. And this one's going to be kind of interesting because this is the pre-CES show. A number of my friends are hopping flights and have already traveled or road tripped out to Vegas. And I miss being able to go and visit and hang out with them and hit these kinds of trade shows, but work responsibilities have actually kept me here to be able to get bills paid and to work on projects. So unfortunately, they're going to have to go and make the Vegas run without me. But of course, we're all hoping that everyone is staying safe, is keeping up with their sort of COVID protocols, and we don't, or even just that you don't end up with a crazy CES flu. Again, the sickest I've ever been, maybe in my entire life, was after a CES. I want to say it was 6 or 7 years ago. So that CES funk can definitely hit hard. So I'm hoping all of my friends out there having a good time, not getting ill, not taking any stupid risks with their health, and that they're going to get to play with some really fun tech and get to share some really fun thoughts on what's going on in Vegas this year. Already catching some fun commentary here. We got Dave Burns, who's going to be making fun of me. The SGG of this wonderfully adequate podcast. That's ugly. I love it. We got Barry Johnson. Happy New Year, Barry. Barry, I just saw it on the subreddit. A really great video sort of talking his way through his camera experiences like Pixel 6 versus the Vivo X70 Pro. I don't know exactly when he published that video. I just recently caught it on the subreddit. Really enjoyed that. Again, just a really savvy and chill kind of conversation through what it's like to really use those kinds of products. We got Utaku. We got Simon Says Hypno. Welp, I'm Damn. JMX Warrior. I think Muppinish. Swedish man dropping in for once. How's it going, y'all? Sweden. Hello, Sweden. I don't know how to say hello. Okay. So hello. I think that's probably pretty close. I hope everyone had a lovely New Year's. I hope you had fun. In our household, it's yet another excuse to make like a good New Mexican comfort food dish. I was a day off. I forgot to prep the pork for, well, yeah, we didn't actually have our New Year's Day pozole on New Year's, so we had it the day after, and that was on me because I forgot to prep it the way that I was supposed to, and it probably would have been fine, but you know, I really wanted it authentic, just a good red chili rub. Let that pork kind of marinate in it for a bit, then get it all going with a big old bucket of hominy. It was delicious, but we had it late. We had it last night. So, Happy New Year's. We're full on into 2022. I'm still wrapping up 2021 videos. I really thought that the smartphone challenge on the subreddit would be done by now, but we're now into our proper top four bracket. So we'll be wrapping up our 2021 elimination challenge over the next couple days. And just trying to get back into the flow, get back into the swing of things while looking at what the future of my channel should look like and what kind of content we want to produce and the collaborations that I'd like to jump in on. I really want to work more with some of my tech pals, some of my friends out there, and get some more collaborative stuff going on between our channels. So there's a lot of that New Year's resolution. You know, I need to get back in shape, could definitely stand to lose 10 pounds. But on top of that, just for the professional side of this too, just, you know, trying to, as we wrap up 1 year, you kind of reflect. And for the last several years, I've been talking about how, man, this cycle, you just kind of burn yourself out throughout the year trying to keep up with this sort of review cycle, and it's less and less fun. And then you get to January, and it's just that natural time of year. It's an arbitrary date on the calendar, but you have that feeling of fresh renewal. You know, we've just been through 2 weeks of rain here in Southern California, which is incredible. That's awesome. But like, you come out of it, and here's this beautiful sunny morning happening right outside my window right now, and I feel rejuvenated. I got a couple days off just to unplug, which for me was just using social media a little bit less. And so you want to come back at this and try and think about what's going to make this sort of fresh. What's going to be entertaining, and not just for the audience, but for yourself too. Because if I'm not having fun with this stuff, then I don't think I'm putting out very interesting or very good videos. So it's kind of interesting. We do have a more properly formatted show. I know, kind of off and on, it seems like every other week I was just doing sort of a casual chat or a pajama podcast. But we do have a news block. We do have a gadget block. We're going to be kind of breaking this show up. The way that, you know, the format of the show is going to run. And I am going to try and keep it to under to 2 hours. Let's see if I can actually make it through 2 hours. But you know, that's maybe one of my New Year's resolutions for the podcast is kind of reining in the 2.5 hour broadcasts. I think Dave has smart money on me not making it to 2 hours. Let's see, just real quick, hitting some of these comments. Welp, I'm damn. I got myself an OG Pixel stand. That's nice. Muppinish, any update? Hungry Surface Duo users in here. We're going to be talking about some updates. I don't really have any solid articles on duos for updates, just outside of the general chatter of the Duo One still not getting Android 11. Gabaletta 2021 was a heck of a year. Yeah, it was. I mean, there was a lot of good things that happened, but sort of the commentary around the year was exhausting. Let's see. Oh, hey, Muppinish, on the topic of getting in shape, I got my own treadmill finally. Best decision I made in a while. Definitely a smart buy, especially just for how twitchy I've been about going to gyms. Dave, I honestly feel like influencer vacation should require all of you to get off of Twitter. Yeah, I kind of resemble that. I kind of own that. And TK's out in Vegas. Sabajo, everyone. Hey, what is up, my buddy boy? I'm going to be piggybacking on your coverage pretty hard. I'm super jealous that you're out there. I wish I was out there with you. So safe travels, my friend, and I'm hoping you're having all the fun out there right now. I obviously there wasn't a real in-person CES last year, but the year before, I thought I was being real clever, taking a year off. So unfortunately, now I'm like, this is like the third CES I haven't been to in person in a row. And that feels weird. I mean, I've been covering CESs for over a decade. And yeah, that's weird. All right. So why don't we knock out a little housekeeping? Because I actually do have some housekeeping to talk about. And from there, we can get into the news block, chew through this, hopefully keep this a bit more efficient than my normal or what I've been doing over the last couple of weeks. So I want to start off wrapping up 2021. I had a whole series of like earbud review things to do, and it was a really fun way to kind of wrap up the year. And it definitely showcases one of the major problems I've got on my channels, and my channel is really broad. Obviously, audio is a passion. Mobility tech is a passion. And then like tips and tricks and editorials and the main mission of my channel kind of becoming less buy the newest whatever because it's the latest and the greatest, but get more use out of your gadgets. I'm not really, a guru in the right to repair because I fix PCs, but I'm not one of those people cracking open phones. It's always weirded me out trying to unglue a phone. But instead of like, just buy whatever's the newest because it's the bestest. I've been trying to say, hey, the phone in your pocket already is probably capable of things that you haven't tried. And that's become a really passionate mission. Those sort of broad categories don't line up for the YouTube algorithm. So I'm trying to find some ways to combat that. I think I might have an idea. But getting into housekeeping proper, I put out an earbud review last week, kind of again in the keeping of wrapping up 2021. I've got one more pair of True Wireless that I need to get through this week. I'm making it sound like homework, but again, I've been having a lot of fun kind of taste testing and sampling and test driving these different headphones. So last week it was the Audict Twig Pro. And I believe another one of our friends who's really into earbud reviews either has or will have a video out on these soon too. But this one was kind of special because these were the first new manufacturer earbuds that I ever had a chance to play with that properly have the Qualcomm Snapdragon Sound logo. So if you remember earlier in 2021, I did a sit-down interview with the folks at Qualcomm. I got to speak with one of their product specialists, and we had an entire chat about this new branding initiative. Tying together all of these different Qualcomm audio technologies into one label that should be easier to understand. And then Qualcomm kind of went radio silent. I mean, the main push after Xiaomi and Audio-Technica jumped on board was the Qualcomm Insider phone. And that's not a lot of news. Like, I can't keep up a conversation about a new audio standard when it hasn't become a standard. So these were kind of special because they are high-res certified Snapdragon Sound, use the new aptX adaptive codec. When you open your audio settings, they say you've got 24-bit 96 kilohertz Bluetooth audio support enabled, and it's a really interesting sound. Again, I had kind of my back and forth on, well, this out of the box tuning versus what I was able to do with them, and then I'm listening to these kinds of sounds, these kinds of songs. And lately, especially for these last couple videos, I've been talking a little bit more about, what kinds of test tracks I use to sample these earbuds, and I finally put together a playlist on Qobuz. So for most of 2021, I was waffling a lot on what music streaming service I would finally settle down with. And I think Qobuz is the one that's gonna keep me subscribed. So I'm putting together an editorial to explain why, but that's gonna be a part of a future housekeeping. We don't need to get into that here. Yeah, see, Gabaletta, this is what's driving me crazy. Gabaletta writes, but one, don't you know you need 10 channels to properly YouTube? As a part of this podcast, I'm going to explain what my plan is, and if there's any feedback or if you guys have any ideas on how to make it work better, I would absolutely be receptive to that kind of conversation. Simon says, Hypno, 10 channels is the correct number. Then a thumbnail of each channel logo fanned out like Joe Bluth with playing cards. Magic. Tricks or what? No, I'm not going to do that line. So the big video, though, the video, Ma Piece de Resistance, the video that I closed out 2021 with, I'm really not interested in a phone of the year kind of conversation. We talked about it before for Salah's video, the whole influencer. It's huge. It's like every tech channel on the planet talking about what phone they were going to take into 2021. And I was the only one talking about Vivo. Literally the only one who mentioned a Vivo. That's as close as I got to a phone of the year kind of conversation. And to me, it's like not a great recommendation for a you should buy it because I use it sort of phone of the year. So I really felt it was important to kind of wrap up 2021 with a little sentimentality, like talking about some of the things that we lost. And for me, obviously, one of the critical conversations, one of the critical losses was seeing LG walk out of the smartphone market. So just to kind of recap, I did a video called LG Phones in 2021, and went over some of the more recent LG phones, like the phones from 2020 and the phones from 2019, and how, surprisingly, it actually was a pretty solid year for LG customers. So if you had bought a phone in 2019 or 2020, this was actually a better than average year for things like support and software updates and new features and on products that are increasingly... I like to showcase as being feature complete over new premium tier phones. And so especially, and this conversation extends, like if you had Sony Xperias from 2020, if you had Galaxies from 2019, your phones are more lifestyle complete than the newer phones coming out from Samsung. You probably have a better overall experience if you're still on like a Galaxy S10 than if you're shopping a Galaxy S21. And that's the other part of housekeeping we're going to talk about here in just a second. But viewed through the lens of LG, if you pick up a phone, like here's my V60, which I was using today to lurk in some Clubhouse rooms and listen to some really fun conversations, that's an incredible media player. It's an incredible content creation device. It's an incredible productivity device. A new phone like a Pixel can outperform it for auto camera HDR snapshots and not much else. So again, it's really trying to maximize what the value proposition of these things are. And looking back, LG was the number three sales in the United States for the first half of 2021. They fell to fourth place behind Motorola. If the mission is to get better phones and to improve technology and to celebrate competition, we're in very dangerous territory in the United States, and we're in terrible shape for South Korea. This is not good. When we lose major players like this, if you're a Samsung fan, you need to be critically worried about Samsung's business practices when there's no company on their home turf to really put pressure on them for better phones. Now Samsung, I believe, is something like 80% of the sales wrapping up 2021. That's not good. That's very bad. If you're a Samsung fan, you need to be concerned. And so again, when we find these other players, it's critically important that we don't just hide behind these platitudes like vote with your wallet. What we lost with LG in the last year of LG, we lost stylus-enabled phones with premium quality audio support, with excellent content creator functionality,
epic battery life, all-in-one devices. Like an LG Velvet is shockingly complete, and that phone launched at the same price as a Galaxy A71. So it's not enough to say, well, LG's marketing, I guess it sucks, if the entire tech review industry was piggybacking on punching down on how LG was such a failure. And now we're seeing the same thing with OnePlus. So again, OnePlus has never sold better than they have over the last year, but every techie commentary is about how they're failing their customers and they betrayed their enthusiasts, and that's dumb. I would betray every single enthusiast if my sales numbers were up 200% year over year. Enthusiasts aren't making up that cash. So, yeah, it's been a lot of feels, kind of getting that stuff out at the end of the year. And then lastly, this is just going to stay as an editorial on the Patreon. I do kind of a semi-regular production diary. And again, just really personal stuff, but something that I kind of felt like I wanted to wrap the year up on, kind of reflect. The most controversial video I put out was my Galaxy S21 review, where this is the hardest I've ever made a recommendation for someone to not buy a phone. And not surprisingly, Samsung fans do not like it when you talk about Samsung like every other reviewer talks about companies like LG or OnePlus. So this is probably, you know, for 2021, this was definitely my most controversial, my most divisive, and some of my angriest responses in the YouTube comments. And I just wanted, I spent a couple minutes just kind of digging through what some of those reactions were. Because again, I know I carry a reputation for being a crank, and I know lots of people think I'm a jerk, but I don't think a lot of people really understand why they're upset with me. And that's fair. It's okay to just have an emotional knee-jerk reaction. But when I go through the bullet points of that video, you know, it's not like I'm saying, don't buy the Galaxy S21, buy an LG instead. I'm not saying, avoid the S21 and buy a OnePlus. I actually say, avoid the S21 and maybe consider picking up an older S20, an S20 FE, or jumping down to a Galaxy A series. I'm telling Samsung fans, buy Samsung. But that's not good enough. I've said something disparaging about one Galaxy phone. I obviously must be a hater. And it's that kind of tribalism that I had to sort of dissect. Like, I just keep revisiting the comments section of this video. New comments keep popping up in my YouTube Studio app. I've got to, like, understand the mentality, understand the psychology. And I keep looking for something deeper, and it's usually not anything deeper. My favorite, just to take a quick tangent because housekeeping is never short, my favorite was someone who left a comment on that video talking, they were almost making it sound like they were going to go out there and defend Samsung against my terrible mischaracterization of their products just to show me. Like, I'm going to go buy an S21 just so that you'll feel bad. Like, that was the mentality of the Samsung fan. And he mentioned, and I'm assuming it's a he, they mentioned that they had an S10. And so I couldn't help myself. I was not kind, because the whole argumentative and combative tone, I like to mirror the tone of the comment back to the commenter, was to mention, like, well, you're going to lose MagStripe SD card support and a headphone jack with a phone that has a lower resolution screen and in most of the benchmarks I can demonstrate is not more powerful. So you're going to get less phone and spend more money, but you do you. I'm not going to tell you how to spend your cash. And his whole tone changed. All of a sudden it was like, you're right. I really do like my phone. You're like, well, what are we doing here? What are you defending if you don't even own the S21, and the whole point of you showing up to this video was to try and hurt my feelings? At the end of this whole exchange, I was still the jerk. I was still an asshole. Oh, my tone. Oh, my tone. But he left that exchange feeling great about his phone. Like, there was no concession, like, oh, hey, thanks, man, you saved me $700 on a phone that's going to be a piece of crap compared to what I already own. No, it was all of this, like, you're still a jerk, but you know what? You're right. I do love my Samsung. So I guess I'm going to chalk that up as a victory. The mission of my channel is to get people to do more with their current products and to be happy with what they have. So I guess that was good. So it's pretty great. But again, it's the whole tech landscape and the whole tech commentary here has just gotten so silly lopsided in this labelism, this fashion brand, this... I don't make videos for those people. I don't begrudge them. If the whole thing that makes you happy is spending a lot of money on a particular product's logo, go be happy. But I can't make videos for you. So it's pretty rough. Dave Burns, yes, I would believe that the lesson of the day is that corporations are not your friends. I mean, I was a diehard Samsung Knight. Until I kind of started shifting over into a combination of LG and Nokia back in the Windows Phone days. And then Nokia kind of broke my heart, and I sort of shifted more into the audiophile category of LG devices. Then LG kind of broke my heart. And anymore, it's just I need to be able to keep these things running for as long as I possibly can because they're not getting better. They're improving in some ways and degrading in others. And it's a weird balancing act as we're spending more than we ever have on our little pocket computers. From ER1980, my wife is keeping hold of her S10. She's had it for just over 2 years and has no intentions of upgrading to anything else anytime soon. It does everything she wants it to do, and she's not attracted to any other device. My wife was the same for her LG G7. The only reason she's on a Pixel now is because she shattered that LG G7. And that phone went the longest. I mean, my wife's purse is notorious for destroying gadgets, and the G7 held up remarkably well. She's on her second screen protector for the Pixel, so I'm worried that the Pixel 4a 5G is not going to last as long. We'll have to see. So, Ted, but this isn't like... Yes, let me just read Ted's comment here. Outrage views are still views. Good thing YouTube hid your dislike button on the video. Got to protect the mental health. Outrage views. You know, when I deserve it, I feel like cool. Like if I'm being purpose, you know, there are definitely times where I've been, you know, like dismissive, argumentative, combative. I really try not to specifically highlight another creator to start beef with. But like, you know, that was a whole ton of Reddit traffic from people that just wanted to talk trash about me. So a bunch of that, you know, that bunch of that commentary is completely uninformed commentary. And the whole point I run any type of channel or podcast or any piece of this is because I want to be satisfied by having more involved and in-depth conversations. I still want to learn things. And I can't do that if it's just a Reddit circle jerk of people parodying the opinions of people and they've never really even used these products. One of the things I talk about in this editorial is the vast majority of people complaining about my S21 verdict are people who don't own the S21. And increasingly, that's the flavor of commentary. I went to GSM Arena and I memorized all the specs of all these devices, and now I complain about how they're all too expensive. And that's not tech commentary. That's not a conversation. That's not anyone I would care to spend any time with. So when they populate my comments, I've got to work even harder at weeding all of those comments out. Oh, the Hawks are saying good morning. Dave Burns, no learning, only ego padding. Yeah, a little bit. Again, there's a flavor of Samsung Knight that only cares about being clever. I knew that product was going to fail, which is why I never support anything until it is so overwhelmingly popular that then I can also be on the winning team when I choose to spend my money on that product. And then you ask, well, what do you do with it? I don't know, like check my email. Oh, Dave, we're beyond housekeeping. Now we're just into Juan prattling on about life and love and philosophy. I need to go like wine tripping through Europe or something like that. Cup of cash, correct. Housekeeping, it never ends.
Hey, folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So, everything that we're going to be talking about, all of the links that all the housekeeping, which we spent 20 minutes on, can be found on somegadgetguy.com. The blog post for this week's episode always goes live. I mean, it goes live the afternoon of, kind of, but then Tuesdays is when everything is kind of in sync with the podcast and the replay and the YouTube, and that's kind of when you should look out for it. And Destadore, I'm going to read your comment, then we're going to get into the news block here, because I know a lot of people who are in this boat. I don't know what I'm going to replace my G8 with, because I know the lack of security and OS updates are going to get to me eventually. Maybe Pixel 6? I don't know. It's tough. Like, for me, it's the V60 represents, like, the most feature-complete phone that's ever been made. Doesn't matter if it's a more powerful device or a phone with a better camera or some other feature that you really, really want. If you used the V60 for what it could really do, every other phone is a downgrade. If you used the G8 for what it could really do, every other phone requires at least a $100 accessory plus a case and complementing kit, and still can't do things like fingerprint and secure face unlock. You know, it's really a trip how good LG was at hardware and how much better they'd gotten at software over the last 2 years of their run. 2019 and 2020 are going to go down as some of the best all-round smartphones ever made. And, you know, that wasn't good enough, according to the tech elite. So there is no good answer. Unfortunately, what I would recommend is going to another phone like a Pixel 6 and keeping your G8 as like a portable media player, as like a DAP, and riding it out that way. And at least you've got some kind of separation of duties, and you go to a two-device strategy, and I think that's the only way to fill in all those gaps. It's pretty rough. I don't have a good answer for it. I don't know what I would do. Again, I'm talking about going into 2022 excited about, you know, using a Vivo. At the same time, I've got my V60 here, and I'm not going to let it go. You know? It's like, it's going to be a game-playing device. It's going to be a productivity device. Every time I sign a contract, I reach for the V60 first. You know, it stylus support. And it's so many of those things, and it's silly that no other device has stepped up. So, getting into the news block. Ugh. Just had to get some stretches out there. So one of the leading political conversations that we've had on this podcast is what to do about the spread of misinformation. And before lockdown, so over the last 2 years that I've been trying to produce a weekly show, this has been a pressing issue. It's been accelerated because of the pandemic. But before we went into lockdown, we were talking about things like misinformation caused by Russian outlets that targeted vulnerable people in other communities to do ridiculous things. It's the spread of bad science for flat earthers. It's the number of people throughout the UK who were torching 5G cell phone towers. We have a problem with bad information spreading aggressively on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and it takes substantially more effort to bring to sort of work back the damage done. And so I know it's a very sensitive issue, and I know there are a number of like sort of libertarian leaning individuals in my audience who believe that even on private platforms there should be some attempt at holding up free speech. So, you know, if a social media company has a public platform that people can read the content on that platform, they have a responsibility to publish everything that might come to their platform. So if someone shares reprehensible ideas, you still need to publish it because free speech. But that's not really how free speech works. It's kind of been shown that when you deplatform someone purposely spreading bad information on a platform like Twitter, it seems to have an effect on less bad information being spread on Twitter. It's definitely a controversial decision, especially when it comes to politicians and policymakers. But so far, we haven't found anything better. There's no better way to combat the spread of misinformation that we found. And so this is kind of one of the big stories over the last couple days. Was a politician here in the United States, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Her Twitter account has been permanently banned on Twitter. She's had several takedowns, you know, Twitter temporarily suspending her account, but it's now a more permanent canceling of her ability to broadcast on Twitter. And I think one of the important things that John Fingas over at Engadget wrote this up. But, you know, obviously this was news that spread very aggressively online. So here's from the first paragraph. Twitter isn't shying away from banning more high-profile U.S. politicians. As the New York Times reports, the social network has permanently banned Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene's personal account after a fifth strike for spreading COVID-19 misinformation. Her official account is still active as of this writing because it hasn't run afoul of Twitter's rules. So, I mean, she has a politician account and she has a personal account, but her personal account was used to spread much more divisive fake information, misinformation. We can also call them lies. In a statement, Green said technology companies and Democrats, quote, can't stop the truth, and accused Twitter of hypocrisy in dealing with Democrats, calling Twitter an enemy to America. However, she signaled no intentions to challenge the ban and only said, we don't need them. So here's the problem. And it's one thing that I really wish more of these articles would point to. Like, I'm not criticizing John Fingas. I mean, this is a great, brief, concise write-up. But there is a First Amendment corollary. The whole notion of free speech is that the government isn't going to come in and throw you in jail because you said something against the government. Oversimplifying. Again, if you want the more complete breakdown of all of this, Legal DJ, some phenomenal issues on free speech and First Amendment rights. But I wish more of these articles would talk about Twitter is a private company. You signed up to Twitter's rules when you signed on to Twitter. You agreed to their terms of service, their licensing agreements. You're playing on their turf. But beyond that, there is a second part of First Amendment law that's been held up by court cases that it's not just what you can say. You have a First Amendment protection so that you cannot be forced to say something you don't want to say. You know, the government can't force you to say something that you don't believe in. Is a freedom of speech, but also a freedom of silence. And so when we talk about a private company like Twitter, they cannot be forced to publish information that they don't want to publish. And that goes for every internet, private internet company. If she wants to have a public platform where her views cannot be infringed upon, she has C-SPAN. Like, she could maybe advocate for more funding for PBS. You know, like, that's the difference. And I wish more of these articles would kind of focus on that. You cannot compel, you cannot force a private individual or a private organization to publish or host speech they don't believe in. So it's compelled speech laws here in the United States. So I'm not too heartbroken, but it is concerning. Again, we want to make sure that there's due diligence being done on fact checking. We know a lot of these moves are policy built more on profitability. You know, having someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene spouting all of this COVID nonsense is probably bad for Twitter, for the companies that would advertise on Twitter. So Twitter sees a hit to their financials, and that's probably the more motivating position as to, you know, why they're taking this stance. But again, at the end of the day, if the mission is to protect more people and to stop the spread of bad information, so far this has proven to be one of the more effective tools in our arsenal. It's just unfortunate that we can't find other strategies to also educate better before we get to this point. You know, she's a wonderful example of, I can say whatever I want. I never have to face repercussions. I can lie, I can cheat, and I can make these outlandish, you know, sort of claims about things I don't really know much about. And you have to be allowed. You have to allow me to say these things. You know, it's such an entitled position, and we need to kind of get around that. So how do we get around it? So far, the best way is to just stop it. It's rough stuff. Hey, Matt Tyler's in the chat. Everyone say, hey, Matt Tyler. So recently had some downtime with an illness. I'm glad to see him in the chat. I reached out to him once where he's like, hey, man, I don't want to pester. You should be getting your rest and healing and recuperating and taking care of your family. But I haven't tweeted in a while, just making sure you're still alive. So I'm glad to hear he's doing all right. Simon says, no, exactly. I demand my rights as a citizen, but disavow any responsibilities as a citizen, seems to be the rallying cry of those supporting Marjorie Taylor Greene. On to some more fun stuff. What are some of the trends that we're excited to see looking into CES this year? This has been an interesting, it's been an interesting lead up to CES where I really wasn't sure if I was going to be going to Vegas until kind of about a week ago. You know, for someone like me, CES is one of those opportunities to network and to connect with PR. It's good to have that face to face. But obviously, I haven't been able to do any of these trade shows in a couple of years. And for some of the organizations that I write for or I produce videos for, no one was really putting a budget together to send teams out to Vegas. Increasingly, we saw a number of companies pulling their in-person presence at CES. And I mean, I just recently even got another, like, an email over the weekend. Stern Pinball is going to be scaling back their CES presence. I feel like the recent spikes, the emergency rooms getting flooded, the Omicron variant of COVID definitely had a lot of people on edge. And for an international, like people coming in from all over the world, you know, that becomes a melting pot where some really fun disease mutations have crept up in the past, especially with the flu. COVID could do something similar. Again, every time, even someone vaccinated, every time someone gets sick, it's an opportunity to change up the disease and make our vaccines less effective against a new variant. But this is still a highlight it's a start to the year. It's how we kick off the tech commentary, the consumer electronics commentary. What do we think are some of the trends that we might see coming out of the show floor? Like Simon Says Hypno says, cheaper mini LED TVs. I mean, just the drop in price. I remember from 2 years ago to now, how radically fast 4K TV prices have fallen. And like the deals you could have gotten the end of this year, I've got that new TCL. TCL 6 Series, pretty good TV. I know there are some panel experts who are like, well, you know, they're sourcing these panels and the quality of the gamma versus the backlight and consistency is 3% different than this other panel of televisions. And you're like, cool, I can finally see horror films on my TV where my Samsung couldn't. So I'm good. Like, I'm happy. It's been a decent upgrade. And that 6 Series TV, I think at full retail is something like a $1,000 television that if you shopped savvy between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I believe it was on sale at one point for like $600, like 40% off kind of a thing. So seeing that kind of movement in the TV space is huge. What I think is kind of interesting is from the techie perspective, and again, just like Simon's comment here, what do we think is going to be the prevailing trend? Do we think it's going to be more, you know, of the fancier HDR color backlighting technologies dropping in price? Or do we think we're going to see that push on the big number? Because right now the big number is 8K. Are we going to get consumers interested in 8K? What about 8K? These new hyper expensive, we got to make our money on these new manufacturing techniques and these new panels that are being binned. 4K is largely replaced 1080p at most price points. Like, it's the same price in a lot of markets to get a nice 1080p TV versus a nice 4K TV. Where do we think that's going to land? Because the whole home theater thing definitely has gotten a lot more exciting over the last 2 years of being in the midst of a global pandemic. I was rambling on, so now I've got to catch up with the chat. Simon says, "Hypno, the 6 Series has always been a great value. I did not realize my family were already on TCL TVs. Here I thought I was being all hip, like, oh, I'm using their phones, and, oh, checking out this TV, and aren't they making all this cool stuff? That was actually one, I don't do a lot with TVs. I don't review TVs. I was way behind on the curve for TVs. Screen size. Oh, Simon, that is a very good point. You know what? I take back my previous comparison. Big number. Okay, so crazy new image quality technologies, new variations of HDR and backlighting, OLED versus QLED, techie. Do you think more people are going to try and make the jump to 8K? Or are we going to start seeing some of these massive TVs taking off in popularity? Because actually, that's a real good point. When we're seeing like higher refresh rates on 70-inch plus 4K television sets, I know a few people who would gladly trade, you know, one generation of fancy HDR buzzwords and extra resolution that they can't use for a much faster panel on a big, big, big 4K TV. You know, like, again, I'm sure we're going to see some like hilariously large format TV. I would love to get rid of the bookshelves behind me and get a wall mount, just an entire wall of television, right? And then I could start, instead of doing a green screen, I could just put things on the television Mandalorian style. You know, like, oh, I just feel like I need to be recording this week's podcast on Tatooine. Boop, 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 boop. And then Tatooine is behind me, but it looks more realistic because it's on a TV, not on not on a green screen. That would make me very happy. So Simon, I absolutely nailed it there. I was not putting that, because Dave Burns, this is the issue. I don't know that we don't have 8K media infrastructure yet. I kind of feel like there are some consumers out there who are going to be impressed by bigger number. So what is the bigger number that they're going to buy more of? Cavaletta, I love all these like age comparisons. 55 is the new 42, 65 is the new 55, and 75 is the new 65. you know, 40 is the new 30. 24K or nothing. I think there's a Bruno Mars song about that, right, Aditya? Dave Burns, isn't there an 85-inch? I don't know. I'm pretty sure Samsung making an 85-inch? I'm not going to be surprised if the end of this CES run, we have a whole list of announcements on basically home cinema televisions. Why go through the hassle of setting up a projector and getting a screen and it doesn't use in bright daylight and you have to, you know, view under optimal conditions when if you've got a chunk of wall and you can point your couch at this wall, we'll just make the entire wall a television. I would not want to have to install an 85-inch TV, but I know a lot of people who would prefer that over more traditional over more traditional home theater cinema projector style setups. You know, that would definitely happen. 15 minutes into Juan's Tatooine podcast, he gets hit with a DMCA strike from Disney. This is not Tatooine. This is a nondescript desert planet. I could be referencing Dune. The SETI Alpha 6. Yeah, that's it. And little worm things that get into your brain and take over your thoughts. And then con! And then Paramount comes after me too. I figure if Paramount and Warner Brothers and Disney are all coming after me at the same time, then nobody wins. Double trouble. So let's see. Let me get this out of the way here. So I think TVs, I agree. I think TVs are going to be kind of a big deal chatting about CES kind of commentary. That kind of cuts me out of some of the conversation because, like I said, I just don't even have the room. I was actually thinking, like, what if I got a wall mount up here because my TV is over on a bookshelf on the other side of the office. I could get, like, another TV and then I could run, like, an HDMI cable to my PC. And then if I want to stream something or watch something, it's like a hard cable connection right, you know, to a display over here. I can turn my camera this way and I can get, like, TV in the background just like I've been doing with my bookshelf. It could be kind of interesting. But I don't review TVs. I'm not good at reviewing TVs. So... So, am I dropping out? Someone drop me comments or something, because I know, Restream is kind of having some issues hanging on to my stream this week. Like, I've been seeing a few, like, occasionally my network connection dips into the yellow instead of staying in the green. So let me know if it's, like, ever, like, completely locked up. But then again, you can also catch the replay or the audio version of the show if it's getting too wonky. I kind of feel like one of the big buzzwords for this year's CES is going to be metaverse, AR and VR technologies. We're going to create the online virtual reality world where people can go and do things. It's totally not like Second Life back in the early 2000s. It's a new thing. It's not an old thing. It's not just a bunch of speculation and buzzwords about getting people to buy VR headsets. Matt Tyre, multiverse. Well, I don't think we're going to invent the multiverse. I think Disney's unfortunately got their copyright hooks on that one now. But, you know, in chatting about some of this meta stuff, or just better online collaboration and better online virtual reality tools, do we think we're going to see any good hardware announcements? Again, something that I can kind of get my hands on and mess around with. I still haven't upgraded my VR headset. I still have that old, inexpensive Acer mixed reality. That, you know, remember Windows mixed reality headsets? That's what I'm still using to dabble with VR. I was spoiled working at Newegg because we got to play with everything. Like I was digging those HTCs, and I think they have an Index. I'm not sure if they still have an Index, but you know, I haven't felt motivated to get anything new. I've been waiting for HTC to come out with something that's a bit more competitive against Oculus. But I kind of refuse to give money to Facebook and have Facebook hardware in my home. So I've been a little behind on VR. But yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. Like we keep talking about metaverse and VR and stuff as if we're going to eventually arrive at like some kind of William Gibson or Ready Player One style future. I don't know. What do we think that some of the first practical applications of this are going to be? I think, like, I hate to say it, but I think Microsoft actually had one of the better arguments for things like online meetings, where instead of you showing up to a Zoom call in this, you can kind of set up a more interactive environment, kind of based on some of their HoloLens tech, and you can show up as more of like a, you know, like an animated version of yourself to collaborate in this space. I thought like that was a pretty good pitch. You know, not just, hey, you can play cool games with your friends in the metaverse, but like we're actually building something that could be a collaborative or productive tool that's also going to be fun to use and engaging. There are so many problems that need to be solved there. Better cameras, better headsets, way better microphones. Again, like I do not want to be locked in the metaverse with most of the microphones that people use for online chat. You know, like online gaming, Zoom calls, terrible, terrible, terrible webcam, laptop microphones. I don't want to be stuck there. It's like it's everything I can do to gnaw my arm off to get out of a meeting like that if someone's like shrill, you know, like you can hear their breathing in the middle of your Zoom call. Sorry, I got to get back to some of these comments. Oh, Dave Burns beat me to the punch. They want Ready Player One for real, but read the book and thought the innovative online industry were the good guys. Well, from a corporation's perspective, those are the people they would identify with. From Andrew, Fat Produce, I'll be honest, even though I have a Samsung Odyssey Plus headset, I'm super tempted by the Quest 2. It's such good hardware. I knew an engineer who was working for OG Oculus. It's kind of a shame that it is what it is today. I want, but I'm not going to give Facebook my money. I think it's the right play, and I wish HTC would build something similar, but charge full price for it and make a big campaign. Do you want Facebook in your home with microphones and cameras? This is what the product really costs. And it's baffling to me that with how unpopular Facebook is, that HTC hasn't come out with a harder advertising campaign against this business practice of radically undercutting the hardware costs and making you a part of their data trafficking ecosystem. What year did Apple invent VR? Oh, Simon. So snarky. I love it. From 3 Dimitri, I really don't want to have meetings in the metaverse. I kind of feel like we're already building towards that. You know what I mean? It's like I'm sitting in front of a camera right now. I'm using NVIDIA software to kind of focus in on me, kind of have the camera track, blur out my background just a little bit more than my camera lens can. It's already like the next baby step, you know? There was an interview we did with one of the NVIDIA Broadcast Studio engineers, where they're already working on real-time animation plugins So I can turn myself into a Simpsons character. I can turn myself into, you know, like a Rick and Morty character. I can turn myself into just a 3D CG, like kind of Frozen style representation of myself. And without any special coding, it's just like the GPU takes all of this information and reformats me into an animated character. So we're already right on that. I mean, I can totally get what you're saying. Like, I don't want to have this metaverse idea of a meeting, but like understanding that these are the next things that are coming, that to me is interesting. I mean, like, I want to find cool things to do with this new tech. I don't want it to just be frivolous. I don't want to have it just to have it. I've got a VR headset that I have that I don't do anything with. But again, it's like if we don't kind of contribute to that conversation, if it's more like, well, I'll wait until the market has decided to give me something and then I'll comment on it. And we've given up our vote. And I don't want us to give up our vote. I want us to be a part of guiding where it goes next. Sorry, that was a rambling brain thing that just happened. Not a direct reply to your comment. Ooh, Steve. And Steve does a bit of this work. I spent a year working QA testing on Oculus software and apps, and I think it made my eyesight worse. I feel like the biology on this is woefully understudied. I desperately want to get my daughter playing with stuff like Beat Saber. Like hell, I'm going to put, you know, VR lenses on a little kid. She's got a lot of growing to do before I'll let her dabble with that. But it's freaky stuff. Again, I have issues with hearing, you know, all of the headphones and stuff that I'm reviewing, how I'm constantly kind of plugged into audio. I think a lot of people are experiencing this now. Remember, there was like a couple weeks back, a bunch of like people were talking about how the new Galaxy Buds were giving them ear infections. And you're like, I don't think you understand all of the health science that goes into making something that biologically contributes to your sort of personal network, where putting something in your ear canal, a very minor change in the materials used can cause irritation. So if your body's used to one set of ear tips and then you swap them out, that could be enough to kick on an ear infection. I have to be so careful when I'm going through earbud review after earbud review after earbud review. And these people who are like, yeah, I think nothing of just kind of keeping earbuds in my ears for really, really long periods of time. Changing out that earbud can have a tremendous impact on your biology. And instead it was like, oh, Samsung just did this thing and new Galaxy Buds suck. And like, I don't want to have to defend Samsung, but I really feel like this is a you behavior thing more than it is Samsung chose materials that were going to infect your ear canals. Like, I don't think you really fully grasp your own behavior, let alone what this corporation is doing to build their products. Oh, Simon, absolutely. Zoom calls with the family are aggravating as it is. Imagine your obnoxious aunt in a sexy avatar saying, I can't hear John. Can anyone hear John? Hello? Why am I flying? I love it. Led Zeppelin watched one episode of Juan's podcast and were inspired to make the song Ramble On. All right, fair play.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
I love it. I love it. So CES is going to be interesting to watch. I think the big buzzwords are going to be AR, VR, metaverse. TVs are going to be huge. I want to wrap up the news block with one more story here, because I think one of the most toxic buzzwords coming out of CES this year is going to be NFTs. So again, another Engadget article, this one written up by Kay Bell. Samsung is putting NFTs in its smart TVs. And I believe this one was shared by Steve on the subreddit. And as soon as I saw it, I knew I needed to make fun of Samsung again. I'm not predisposed to liking Samsung. I genuinely don't enjoy how they kind of sort of handle their business and how they treat their customers, especially for TVs, because my experiences with the Samsung TV were pretty much miserable. But this to me is yet another exceedingly cynical cash grab from a company that is still kind of putting the screw to their customers for ads, for accessories, for, you know, increasing prices, paying off their $10 billion a year ad campaigns. I can't think of anything I'd want less in a TV than a marketplace built in to buy a completely specious, speculative product. So first, Samsung, I just do not trust that they've got great intentions when they're including this kind of stuff into a television. Their data tracking policies, their advertising policies, it's terrible stuff. I really, really would recommend doing more comparative shopping, or if you get a Samsung TV because you genuinely want like this kind of panel quality or something like that, making sure you never activate it, you never connect it to the web, you never sign in, and you use some other type of brain for that panel that you think you want. I am increasingly horrifically disappointed over the period of time that we sort of suffered through using a Samsung TV. So that's just my baggage. The big problem I have is also this kind of speculator run on this buzzword technology that's going to be running through Las Vegas. I believe NFTs are going to be an incredible backbone technology for a number of industries. And especially when we kind of focus in on entertainment, I think they have so much potential for sort of democratizing a marketplace for video game content. You know, if you have skins or weapons that you want to sell, having some way of kind of declaring ownership outside of just the one server that game runs on. And it could actually help prolong the life of some games. Like, hey, I've got some older games, maybe the servers are being shut down, but there's content in that game that's attached to specific people, modifications that have been built by specific people, and you can own these pieces or you can kind of collect them. I think there's something really interesting there. I come out of the era of collectible card games, so I really like the notion of tangible things that existed in limited quantities that then aided other games. Like, if you can look at Magic the Gathering, for me, my game was Vampire. Vitesse, Vampire the Eternal Struggle. I played that way more than I played Magic the Gathering. If you can look at Vitesse or Magic and say, well, that was the original pay-to-win, you kind of miss the point of having tangible gameplay devices. It was a physical product. I would go and buy a pack of cards. Well, that's just like buying a loot box, but not. So I would buy a pack of cards. I knew I was getting cards. Sometimes I would get really, really good cards. Sometimes I'd get a bunch of cards that I had duplicates of. Sometimes I'd get, you know, cards that didn't really help me, but I could trade or sell to get cards that I wanted. And a loot box is you are going to roll the dice at a percentage to possibly unlock a character that you'd want to use. So you're throwing real money at the chance to unlock a piece of a character. I bought a pack of cards, I got a pack of cards, and those decks got huge. And it was beneficial because, too, if I got a bunch of duplicates, I could put together alternate decks, right? Obviously, I could have just, you know, taken down one of my decks, like, hey, I've got a Ventru deck, let me put this together, cool, and I've got these guns, and I've got these attacks, and I've got these replies. Awesome. But if I have to take that deck apart if I want to play my Bruja deck, well, that's a lot of organization. So I would overbuy for some of these common cards so that I could put together multiple decks. So if I showed up to a tournament, I could say, hey, I see you're playing Nosferatu. I want to play Toreador. Ha ha. Now let's really get into this. Oh, you're into Thaumaturgy. I want to play more distance and ranged combat. So it's fundamentally different while still being similar. It was a really rambling way of saying I don't like NFTs in their current form. So the problem I have with NFTs in their current form is they don't really point... the current implementation of NFT doesn't really point to the actual product. So there's a blockchain, and there's a registry in that blockchain that says, you own this thing. And then it points you to a link. And then that link takes you to the thing that you supposedly own. And right now, the entire process of kind of verifying that is fundamentally broken. And it's really easy to create these kind of Ponzi schemes, these kinds of pump and dump kinds of schemes. I can go and create an NFT of one of my photos. And then I'm going to point the NFT to a link where that photo lives on my website. And then I get two or three friends, and we just sell that NFT to each other at increasing prices. Started out at $100 for this photo. Man, the last time this photo got sold, it was $10,000. This thing is really valuable. And then, based on the perception of its value, I can try and sell it off and say, hey, you know, I'm taking a hit on this. I'll give it to you for $5,000. What a great deal. And I went from creating a photo that had no intrinsic value, selling it at a really low price to myself, building it up through this kind of mechanism that we've created, and then selling it off for something just because someone thought it had value because they saw someone else buy it for a lot of money. That's a scam. Like, that's not real. There is no intrinsic value to that. And it kind of just falls in line with some of these other, like, crypto cash schemes, and it's heady stuff. But then the other tech problem with that is that the content or the material that you're buying in the NFT doesn't live in the blockchain. It lives somewhere else on the internet. So even more despicably, I could say, I took this amazing photo of a sunset over the 101. It's phenomenal. It just sold for $10,000. You can buy it now. I'll sell it to you for $5,000. Someone buys it. All they've bought is a link in a blockchain register. And if I wanted to be really poopy about it, I could change the photo at the end of that link on my website. I could make it, you know, a photo of a velvet painting of dogs playing poker. And technically, they wouldn't be able to do anything because they bought the registry pointing to that link. And that's it. They bought the address to the content. They didn't buy the content. I mean, it's exceedingly rare that the content you buy in an NFT is actually a part of the blockchain. It's already so much information to process. Like, it would be an order of magnitude more data to verify if all of the content really lived there. Think about movies, think about songs, think about videos, think about clips, think about images. It would be an entirely new internet all unto itself just to verify that blockchain of NFTs. So, you know, again, I'm making fun of Samsung here because it's just buzzword. They're just getting in on this buzzword trend, and it's going to be a pump and dump, and a lot of people are going to get burned by it. But increasingly, when I see, like, hey, NFTs being able to sort of declare value for a piece of online media or a piece of content, there is something interesting about that. And I think it will be a phenomenal technology to use for media, for, you know, sort of verifying purchases, for real world IRL or AFK kinds of situations, like maybe a part of the blockchain has to do with live performances, and your seat was one of 1,000 in a concert hall. And so now you have a piece of that that's verified that you were there. I mean, there are so many interesting ideas on how you can put those together and make it sort of a more global or a more democratized register of how that media moved around, or how that content got played, or how that video game was consumed. That to me is the future of NFTs. This current idea of I can buy this thing and now I own it has been grossly oversimplified as to how the actual technology really operates. And again, it's like a huge buyer beware, because every time we get into this, like when we got into the housing bubble, right before the housing crash in 2007, I was working at a tech reseller, and I had a manager who was just like, I'm buying up all these properties. It's so easy to get home loans now. I'm going to be flipping all these houses. Dude got wrecked. He got in right at the highest point, all of these mortgages, all of them on like terrible, terrible terms, lost everything. It was brutal. And we're seeing similar things, you know, like, oh, you missed out on Dogecoin. Well, here's this other crypto coin that's obviously going to increase in value. And it does for a few people, and then a bunch of people buy in at the peak and then lose cash because it plummets after that. And I kind of feel like NFTs are going to do something very similar for a lot of people. There's no guarantee that this server is going to host your artwork in perpetuity. So you bought this thing and it points to the web address where that thing should live, and then that server went offline. So now you no longer have your thing. It's pretty gross. Oh, so Matt Tyler again. So what Ubisoft is doing, I don't like that implementation. Sorry, Matt Tyler writes, NFTs have made it into the gaming world, FFS. Ubisoft, you greedy wankers. I think there will be a much better open marketplace of video gaming content. I don't think Ubisoft has the solution in its initial implementation. it's pretty rough. So Muppinish is saying, see, again, this is like a positive implementation of this. I own an NFT on the Cardano blockchain. This NFT is a comic book character that will be featured in a real comic book this year, most likely. This is why I buy NFTs, to help people like him fulfilling his dreams of his own comic book run. That's great. I feel a number of creators, and currently a number of creators are getting burned by this because their artwork can be ripped off and their artwork can be sold by other people. And this whole process is tough to police right now. To verify, someone made this piece of art and they are the rightful owners of this media to sell it themselves and benefit from it. So what you're doing is phenomenal. Supporting your favorite content creators is always going to be a mission I'm going to celebrate. In that time, though, or especially during these early days, if you're putting your money into that creator, you're doing it because you value that creator's work, not because you really think you're going to own this comic book character in perpetuity and that they belong to you. It's that you're supporting their work. I think that's very honorable. There are also a number of other ways to do that have nothing to do with NFTs, right? You can Venmo that person $5. You can, if they have a Patreon, you can support their Patreon. If they only exist making YouTube videos, you can spend some of your time and some of your own social media cred to share their content. All of those things are also supporting that individual. So again, NFTs don't really do much for that individual in the long term. Like it's a very limited scope kind of way of supporting that individual. It's where we should see it grow beyond that is where I'm excited, and we could potentially see some really cool application of this stuff, but I don't believe in its current form it's going to be something to really rely on, to really count on. I own this piece of media because someone sold it to me isn't really the way online media works at all. Yeah, and exactly, Simon says Hypno, there's basically no consequences. Like, you could go out right now and copy a whole bunch of things and call them NFTs. Go hit DeviantArt and see all of the creators there that are now starting to pull their catalogs because people are just going in, copy-pasting, and reselling their other people's artwork. It's, you know, it sucks. I love this from Matt Tyler. You know, while we're on this, link in the description to purchase my NFT, Juan says quietly. It's always one of my favorite jokes, like, especially from being an old school theater student, like, sota voce, I'm whispering on stage very loudly. Yeah, exactly, Muppinish. When will you release your own NFTs? I demand an SGG hat NFT. I'm not. Until I can kind of see some, you know, again, until I can kind of see some other value or some other benefit. If you want to give me a buck, if you give me a buck on Patreon, it is the easiest way for me to verify some contribution, some help, and give you some value for it. Give you some exclusive content or camera reviews or production, something. I feel I can give you a dollar's worth of value in entertainment. And that to me is the easiest way to do it. If I come up with some kind of NFT or something, I personally don't see where I can give you any value. I'm a pretty good photographer. I can post some really pretty images, but I post those really pretty images and you buy an NFT of that image, I have not given you any additional value. I haven't. Everyone else is still looking at all those pretty images. Someone could copy that pretty image and share that pretty image. Like, it's really difficult for what I do to try and find what is the perk. I want to give you a perk for helping to support me. And NFTs aren't going to be it for a while? Anyway. Aw, Kappa Cash. I'm really glad. I'm really happy to hear that. It says he got his value, his money's worth on my Patreon. That's really sweet. And again, I'm looking forward to kind of getting back into the swing of doing a little bit more sort of Patreon-based. Like, especially the community events are so soul-replenishing, doing the movie nights and the game nights. So I'm hoping to really kind of dig into that a little bit more, especially for the game nights. I haven't done a game night in a while. So again, I don't want to tell people not to be excited about a new technology, but I want to keep that conversation in perspective. Got to be really careful when buzzword, and then people start throwing money at it, not really understanding what it is. So real quick, I want to do a Patreon plug. Every podcast has a Patreon. Mine is no exception. Subreddit plug. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Sorry, I was just talking about the Patreon, and I kind of went into my patter at like the end of my videos. You know, you can also catch all these fun names at patreon.com/glowinggadgetguy. No, we're talking about the subreddit, which you don't need to pay for. That's reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I don't know what's going on. I've been having a hard time updating my leader for the week, but I just want to focus specifically on the phone elimination challenge. We're almost done. We're into the final four. Let me go into screen share here. Day 25. And Oppo has just been eliminated. I was shocked. The entire day yesterday, Oppo and Sony were tied. And it was hilarious because it was like one vote to one vote, one vote to one vote. It was almost perfectly lockstep that these two companies were going to tie and go out together. Sony has held on phenomenally well. But now, literally minutes before I posted this, I had to redo the bracket because I did a bracket where I crossed out Oppo and I crossed out Sony. And then one vote minutes before we were done finished off Oppo and kept Sony alive. So it was literally, it came down to one vote at the last minute and Oppo is out. I was absolutely shocked. I really thought our final four was going to be Oppo, Google, Xiaomi, and Vivo. Vivo has just flown under the radar. Like, no one's really voting for them, but no one's really voting against them. You know, it's like a company that not a lot of people are, especially in North America, it's a company a lot of people aren't really as aware of. And it's just been riding out the vote hard. So, new bracket, new vote. I'm going to put in my vote. So, who do we got? We got, let me click on the link here. We've got Google, Sony, Vivo, and Xiaomi for our final four. This is really tough for me because I like what all of these companies have been doing. But what we're going to say, who had the weakest year? I think Google had a really strong philosophical year. The 5A did really well. It was a great phone. They got Tensor out the door finally. Obviously, I think a lot of people would be upset about updates, but every single company that's putting out an Android 12 update has had some kind of issue. Sony had a really tough year for distribution, but they did really well with the actual products, like the Xperia 1, Xperia 5, Xperia Pro I. I think they're all phenomenal actual devices. Vivo, I know a little bit less about in terms of global market share, but I was just so utterly charmed by the X70 and X70. The X70 Pro and the X70 Pro Plus. And then Xiaomi, I think, kind of dominated for sales. So even though they don't sell in North America for, I think, two quarters of the year, they outsold everyone else. So like they were outselling Samsung without any market presence in the United States. So let me think. I mean, my personal fave just in terms of individual devices was the X70 Pro Plus. But I think I'm going to have to say Vivo. I think Vivo had a very good, just sort of keeping pace kind of year. And TK is like, oh, I like the Vivo X70 Pro Plus. Yeah, you have my phone. You have my phone out in Vegas. Please bring my phone home safe to me. But out of these four, this is the final four. I mean, this is the big vote. We're really getting into it at the end. I think I'm going to say Vivo. I'm going to put in a vote. It kills me. But, you know, I'm having to make the Sophie's choice here based on all of the various market forces. God, it was such a strong year for them, though. I'm torn. It's either Vivo or Google. Oh, jeebus. What am I going to do? No, you know what? I'm going to stick with it. I respect Google's move to walk away from Qualcomm. That was a ballsy move. I'm going to vote Vivo. Oh, but Vivo has that really great co-processor. Nope, I'm going to vote Vivo. That's my vote. All right, so the whole subreddit is built on trying to celebrate content creators, someone who you think deserves more attention. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We're into the final four. We're going to see who had the strongest year in 2021 by voting out company by company by company. So it's getting down. It's getting down to the end here. It's really tough choices all around. The entire top 10 bracket was such a fun bracket to see who the community had kind of supported and who the community had kind of voted out. So one more time, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Go check it out. We've got some amazing posts. Barry recently featured one of the top posts of the day talking about the Vivo X70 Pro, not the Pro Plus, the X70 Pro, and his conversations about that in the Pixel 6, and some great articles and videos being shared. We've got two videos up talking about Nords. We've got someone breaking down, we got C-Dubs breaking down Pixel 6 versus Galaxy S21 Ultra cameras. We've got Galaxy Tab A8. We've got Spectacular Gadgets looking at a survival kit for your phone. We got Trent's Tech Chill Stream. He did a chill stream talking about how much he loves MacBooks. He's going to be a big old MacBook shill now. I mean, some really, really good stuff. So yeah, I'm absolutely shocked that the final four is what it turned out to be. I really thought the last two companies standing were going to be Xiaomi and Poco. And Poco got capped early in the top 10 bracket. I was blown away. So really, really fun stuff. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Okay. Got just a couple little news pieces, gadget pieces here to talk about. And then I think we're going to wrap this up on some processor tech. Looking at these new Snapdragons and MediaTeks. First of all, I just want to throw, this one's going to be fast. Everyone just throw an F in chat. BlackBerry OS devices will stop working tomorrow as of this podcast recording, January 4th, 2022. If you have a BlackBerry OS device, it's not going to reliably work anymore. And this includes issues with phone calls, text messages, and 911 emergency calls. So all of the server-side stuff that makes a BlackBerry work and makes a BlackBerry is basically going poof. And unfortunately, those of you who were really holding on, because I've got some older BlackBerries, like I'm never going to give up my Passport. That is still one of the most beautiful alternative devices that's ever been made. The camera was pretty good, and the square screen was nice and high resolution for its time. The battery life was incredible. I mean, it's so sad that we've lost the plot on other form factors and other things. Dustadore, any truth to the BlackBerry Key 3 rumors? So right now, the company that's licensing BlackBerry, so I can't remember what the name of the company is now. Someone tell me the name of the company. But anyway, they were saying they were going to get a phone out last year, and that obviously didn't happen. Something Beyond? I can't remember. Mobility? I can't. Yeah, I don't know. Onward Mobility. Aditya had it. So they're the company that's currently licensing the BlackBerry IP to make a phone. The official RIM, official BlackBerry Research in Motion, they're not making hardware. So the previous company was TCL. TCL had licensed the BlackBerry name, the BlackBerry tech, BlackBerry keyboard, and they were making the Key 1 and the Key 2. So I doubt there's going to be a Key 3 because that was a TCL product. The Key was a TCL product. I think instead what we're going to see is some new keyboard phone with a different name, but Onward Mobility doesn't seem like... When they first announced, they weren't a real company. It was a loose collection of sort of tech entrepreneurs. I think they were kind of playing a bit of a shell game. It was kind of gross. Like, literally the day they announced, they didn't have a website. You clicked on, like, their press release, and it took you to a Facebook fan page kind of a thing. And it didn't have any real information on it. And they've been teasing the BlackBerry community saying, hey, this is going to be coming and we're going to do this and it's going to be Android and apps and 5G and great battery life. And none of it's come through. So I'm not putting much on an actual BlackBerry successor. I think it's kind of dead. And it makes me sad because what I want is a Key 3. The Key 2 is still a shockingly good communicator phone, even for it being a little underpowered in this modern era. yeah, exactly, Dave Burns. That's frustrating. Do you know how easy it is to put up a basic WordPress site? But again, they're not real. They don't seem like real techs. They seem like investors and entrepreneurs. And I think, the whole notion was like, this could be easy, but no, making a phone is not easy. So really, really sad. Also really, really sad. If you're on one of these, oh, it's in my pocket. If you're on one of these fancy Pixel devices, you're probably just a little bit frustrated about the current state of updates. Ooh, excuse me. Just had a big old coffee burp there. This is the official Google support page. December 2021 update has been paused. If you're having issues with connectivity, they've got a flash tool that can take you back to the previous tier of software and will hard reset your device. So it's going to wipe everything out and start you fresh. But they've pulled the December update. It's expected that it's going to come in late January. So, you know, just in time for the February, security patch. I'm kind of bummed, but I also feel like this is a critical, a tremendously important talking point to bridge. Android 12 has a lot of things going on under the hood that seem to be complicating the update process. I'm so tired of techies that refuse to consistently grade things like updates and the quality of those updates. But like the only thing that they can really latch onto are like, well, there's this one new feature and the launcher's kind of different, and now I'm angry and this company is betraying their customers. Rolling a massive operating system update is difficult under the best of conditions, but every single company, has teething pains. There is no such thing as a perfect software update where what they should have done is waited until they got it right, and then they wouldn't turn their customers into beta testers. And if that were true, if any company could pull that off, I would imagine Apple would probably be a part of that conversation. But every major operating system update comes with a flurry of 0.1 bug fixes and patches afterwards. If it were true that Apple could magically make a software update, an operating system update that didn't require any work, you would not need additional subsequent updates. There wouldn't be a 15.1.2.345. That wouldn't exist. Ditto. Samsung, flurry of updates after their big One UI 4 Android 12 update. I think they're what? The Galaxy S21's on its fourth or fifth patch after that update. So where's all the gnashing of teeth about how Samsung can't get their software right? Right? It's the same conversation. It's literally the same conversation. Oh, but they didn't pull their Android 12 update. Yeah, but it's not working. Like, it's not good. So where is that umbrage? Where is that ire? I think it's hilarious. But right now, if you want the most up-to-date, best consistency, the sort of Android 12 operating the closest to the way that it probably should, your best bet is either a Galaxy Ultra, an S21 Ultra, or a OnePlus 9. So we've gotten two updates on the OnePlus 9 after shifting to ColorOS, and the phone's running better for me than it ever has in its entire existence. Like, it's running better on Android 12 than it was on Android 11. All of these nerds are complaining about ColorOS, and if I wanted an Oppo, I'd go buy an Oppo. Then fine, leave. But OnePlus sales have never been higher, so they're not going to miss you. And the phone is better. If the mission is to get the better working phone, I don't care what the launcher looks like. And I don't care what customization I have for the icons. I care that the camera is stupid fast now. The image quality has improved. The video looks real good. And that the functionality of the phone is faster and more fluid than it was before. So they got the major update. They pulled that, re-released it with another patch update. And then we got another smaller. It was like a 70 megabyte bug patch. Doing great. I'm so much happier. There's one issue. I can't get live caption to work on my OnePlus 9. That's the only bug that seems to remain out of Android 12. So that's it. It's the companies that have kind of iterated on that. It's hilarious. Like between my OnePlus 6 and between my Pixel 6 Pro and my OnePlus 9 Pro, my OnePlus 9 Pro doing a little better on the Android 12. So again, I feel like we need to kind of keep all of this stuff in perspective. I think there's an issue. I don't think that means you never buy a Pixel ever again. I think it means you've got to understand the complications of putting out good software under challenging conditions. And I don't think that really, sort of dissuades someone who, if they were interested in a Pixel, they should still go and shop a Pixel. But again, it's like you're not really pointing to someone doing it better. You can't point to someone doing it better because no one really is fundamentally doing it better. Like, everyone has their own unique challenges, and I think every company is failing at different points in the update process. So it's kind of funny to see this. Like, there was another one, like one of the videos that was posted on Glowing Rectangles. I think it was this morning. Just another like hard hitting tech pundit, how OnePlus is failing their customers. They're failing. You see, they are betraying and failing, and it's like four techies with no data, all just talking about the feelings of what OnePlus used to represent. And OnePlus, you know, someone doesn't want to buy a $700 phone, they could buy a OnePlus, and it was like flagship, it was close to a flagship. And now they're just making regular flagships. If you're just going to buy a regular flagship, who would buy that? And you're like, this is the biggest nothing burger. It is like a vacuum of discussion. Like, none of it, because no one was talking about how, like, sales in Europe are up 400%. Global shipments and sales are up 200% year over year. The Nord is selling like crazy. They're making more specific and targeted devices for different regions, and those are selling very well. And that most of these companies are kind of giving up on the United States as being, like, a tech leader and still enjoying phenomenal success. Like, Xiaomi is the number one in the world. They have completely ignored the United States. And every single one of their criticisms, like, well, you know, OnePlus can't be everything to everyone. And then in the next breath, talk about how, like, Samsung is the model of doing this right, when Samsung is literally failing at the high end, and most of their success is coming at the mid-range, but they have the widest portfolio of devices to like as actual Galaxy phones, you know, Galaxy A series, S series, Z series. Like, they're trying to be everything for everyone, but OnePlus is failing because they're selling more than they ever have before. Again, so done with that. So, short story incredibly long. Pixel fans, we gotta wait it out. We want good software, we want improvements. Unfortunately, that's just kind of the deal sometimes. If we want to live at the bleeding edge, we also kind of have to accept that sometimes this stuff isn't going to land. If you're on a Z Fold 3, you too know our pain. If you're on a Duo or a Duo 2, you too also understand our frustrations. It's just the way things play out sometimes. And it sucks. And it does. And we should be frustrated. But this notion that one time I didn't get my update when I wanted it, I'm never buying from this company ever again, means you'll never have a company to buy from. Eventually, you're going to get burned by every single company out there that makes products. It's just the reality of how this stuff works.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the OnePlus stuff is hilarious. Simon says, if no, I saw some... Oh, where is it? I saw some amazingly nasty persons on a OnePlus tweet today. It was brutal to read. Responses. I think you meant to say responses. I saw some amazingly nasty responses on a OnePlus tweet today. It's all just emotional baggage. You want to talk about the worst smartphone snowflakes in our enthusiast community? It is OnePlus fans who feel betrayed by their phones getting better and more expensive, which any other company that would be considered a good thing, but they're the most toxic indie music fans of the tech scene. I liked that band before they were popular. Now they're just sellouts, which basically means I liked this band when they were starting out, and I hoped they would never get successful, but that they would still be able to keep making music just for me. I liked OnePlus when they were this tiny enthusiast label. I never wanted them to grow. I wanted them to keep selling phones at almost a loss just so I could buy cheap devices, and then they changed, and they betrayed me. It's the most selfish flavor of entitlement, and I have zero chill for it. And again, it's popular now for techies to jump on that sentiment. No data, but it's good for your YouTube videos, and it's the common theme, it's the common talking point, it's the common metric to judge YouTube success. So they get to make money off of it, but it doesn't represent reality. Reality is these products have never sold better than walking away from the enthusiast sector. According to YouTube, it's a travesty. According to real life and sales, it's never been better. Oh. So Aditya, that is a much longer conversation than I have time for left in this podcast. But Aditya writes, what exactly is the purpose of an S21 FE when we have an S21 money? Samsung needs to make more money. That's good for Samsung, right? So they can sell you a phone that's basically the same as an S21, probably a lower tier bend Snapdragon and weaker cameras to save a couple cents, and they can still sell it for way more than that phone is worth. But I mean, like, that's how you pay for $10 billion a year advertising campaigns, is cell phones that are demonstrably not competitive, but bank on the brand label. Even with these teething pains, anyone out there seriously shopping an S21 FE needs to really assess their priorities. An A-series Galaxy, gonna be way better for you. You've got a whole slate of mid-rangers, like a Pixel 6, not a 6 Pro, a Pixel 6. Great, that's a great phone. And it's gonna have a better main camera sensor than what's in that Galaxy. I mean, it's just, it seems like such a terrible buy. The S21 into an S21 FE, it's such a joke. It makes me so sad. That is not the Samsung that I used to be a ridiculous, obnoxious fan of. This is a company that desperately wants to be Apple, and they're not going to pull it off. And they're going to tank a huge chunk of the premium Android smartphone market and ruin it for everyone else because their products devalue the fastest. They have all of the worst games with trade-ins and quick sales. And then they're going to still come out with a terrible option if you were seriously trying to shop a mid-ranger. So it's from Dave Burns. I don't think the FE is worse components all around. I think what they're going to do is kind of something a little similar to what they did with the S20. The S20 was a much better built phone, was more expensive to build, had a nicer screen, had nicer camera sensors. And then the S20 FE sort of ended the production run of the S20. So when the S20 FE came out, they stopped making the S20. It was much harder to find an S20. And I think that's what their plan was. You get the early sales on the S21, you ride that for half the year, and then the FE comes out, and you kind of get to just replace the last, you know, sort of chunk of that S21 with a cheaper to produce phone that costs close to the same. So it seems like a bargain, but they've swapped out the camera modules and it's a plastic back phone. And maybe the screens are sort of a little bit lower bin in quality and the chipset is a little bit lower bin in quality. And you get to make more money on each purchase that way. And I think it's pretty clear that trying to get the FE out around the launch of the Pixel 6 absolutely disrupted Samsung's plans there. Oh, and Barry, I mean, like, Xiaomi's hardware game is just ridiculous right now. Barry says Pixel 6 or a Xiaomi 12 over the FE any day. For sure. I mean, again, I have some issues with Xiaomi's software, but Xiaomi's hardware has been just flipping phenomenal. Speaking of, Barry gave me the perfect transition just to kind of throw this up and highlight it. Say cheese for the Xiaomi 12 Pro smartphone's monstrous camera. So this is not the Ultra. This is the Xiaomi 12 Pro. This is written up by Sharon Harding over at Ars Technica. They're moving into the mega sensor game across their lineup pretty hard. I want to say the Mi 11 had a 1 over 1.6 inch sensor, and now the Xiaomi 12 is going to move up to a 1 over 1.28. So the sensor in the Xiaomi 12, the main camera sensor, is going to be just a tiny fraction larger than the camera that's going to be in the camera that's in the S21 Ultra and the Pixel 6 Pro. So the Sony sensors on these, especially the pixel binning sensors, have been surprisingly good. And this is just like yet another great alternative to like what Samsung's been playing at near the same price. This is a camera sensor that's significantly larger than what you would find in an iPhone 13 Pro. And with just a little bit of work, maybe you also install like a third-party camera app. It's just great hardware. So we've got a proper competitor, I feel, to the GN1. We'll probably see something again like a GN2 type follow-up for the Ultra if we start seeing leaks or rumors on the 12 Ultra. But this is exciting just to kind of see again really expensive and premium camera tech falling to lower and lower price points. Again, now that we're all sort of, you know, when you get into the upper premium mid-rangers and higher, all of our phones now are coming with larger than half-inch camera sensors. That's pretty exciting. Again, it's improving the hardware side of it. Obviously, software always needs to be taken into consideration, but you start off with a better base when the hardware is improved. So it's pretty cool. I mean, again, you can start off with that better hardware and then kind of grow from there. Like the idea of a Xiaomi 12 or a Xiaomi 12 Pro and then adding Filmic, like, would get a lot of people really excited. It was also what got me so lit up about the Vivo. Like, Vivo's weird post-processed image-stacked DNG faux RAW files are really good. I mean, just phenomenally good. Like, you've got a RAW file, it's a DNG, but it's processed almost like a night mode photo before you even start editing it with so much data. It's like a 25 megabyte image to start your post-processing on after it's already done image stacking from one of the largest production sensors in a smartphone. It's really good. Like this next year, again, at the premium tier, when you're really trying to push these devices to their limit, really good. Really good stuff. So good. Dave Burns. Yeah, but Apple's better. So, I just kind of want to wrap this up. We've got the last 10 minutes here. We've been seeing some early reviews and benchmarking and testing being done. I haven't gotten my hands on one. And Lenovo, Motorola, they never reply to me anymore. So I'm kind of pulling this is from Golden Reviewer, but a few other outlets have gotten their hands on this new Motorola to compare performance on the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. And in this video specifically, the one that I'm going to be linking in the show notes, it's a comparison against a phone with an 888 and a phone with an 870. So the thing that I find interesting, Motorola I don't believe they put out any phones with an 888. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong immediately. But I feel like Motorola jumping on the 8 Gen 1 is maybe the worst start for an SoC. And I don't mean that to slam Motorola, because I think they make great daily driver phones. Their mid-range and entry-level game is refreshingly strong. And the company that's eating up most of LG's market share in the United States is Motorola. They're now the number three smartphone manufacturer in the United States. And I feel that deserves, and not just because LG dropped off, but because they genuinely ate up that market share. Entry-level and mid-ranger phones sell. And they're fulfilling that demand. They deserve to be in that category where we lost the LG K series and the Stylo. So, because Simon says, no, the Edge 20 Pro, but I thought the Edge 20 had the 870. So again, I thought they had a variation of the 865 from 2020, not the 888. I feel like the companies like Xiaomi and Samsung, who started early with the 888, did not build their phones well for the 888. We're talking about phones that performed fast, but could throttle aggressively, ran really hot to the touch. I feel like when we got into the second half of the year, if you compare the consistency of performance from a Vivo X60 to a Vivo X70, I feel like the X70 loses more of those sprinting kinds of tests, but Vivo worked harder to rein in the thermals on the 888 Plus. Hold on. Oh, I don't know why I muted my mic there. I was trying to pull up a website. I can't think with all of my noise. I muted my own mic. I'm getting to the end of the show here, folks. I'm going to stick this landing. I promise we're not going to crash and burn here. Okay, that was a lot of preamble here. Sorry. the concern I have is Motorola jumping to the 8 Gen 1, I'm worried that they didn't have the manufacturing experiences that these other companies had in 2021. So starting off 2022, they're likely to make some of the same processing, software, and hardware mistakes that Samsung, Xiaomi, Microsoft, OnePlus, that they made at the beginning of 2021. So sorry, that was a really long ramble to get to that point. But what we see in a number of these videos, we see kind of the same year-over-year 10% bump to CPU power that no one can ever really demonstrate why you need more CPU power. In the comments right now, I need you to tell me what you do on your phone that a 10% bump in CPU performance nails it for you, okay? Tell me with an app what app you use where that's going to make a demonstrable difference in your ability to get work done out in the field. So from an 888 to an 8 Gen 1, you need 10% more CPU power. Why? One of the exciting aspects is the GPU performance does seem to have mostly caught the Apple A15. So one of those areas where iPhones were always like a generation ahead, Qualcomm has caught. So the GPU performance here got a substantial increase. We're talking in some games and some benchmarks as much as a 40% increase over the 888. But in its entirety, one of the things that's making me more nervous is while we see all these performance increases, we're also seeing a significant bump in power draw. So the device gets like 10% more CPU performance, but it's drawing like 2 watts more power. We're starting to see power draw that is starting to pace with laptop power draw. Like 9 watts off the GPU is concerning in something pocketable. And so for one of his tests, the Golden Reviewer, one of his tests, he like measures 60 degrees Celsius off of the screen. And that's really hot. Like, that is concerningly hot. Now, the phone did keep up with all of those tests. It didn't seem to throttle as aggressively, but it burned battery more aggressively, and it generated significantly more heat. And so this is my big concern, and this is also my big hope, is going to this type of refresh, new ARM cores, the new X2 performance core, the new A-series cores, I want to see a manufacturer like OnePlus take this hardware and rein it in. Because if you can give me Snapdragon 888 performance, and maybe a little bit, like only like a 15 to 20% bump on that GPU, we would have 2021 performance at a power saving. It's the thing, I wrote an editorial on it a couple weeks back, especially during the MediaTek announcement, talking about the new Dimensity. We can see how exciting is this, that ARM is saying these new cores are gonna give us like, you know, 10 to 15% more performance. That's awesome. But if you look at their power, we're getting 15% more performance at like 20% more power draw. And that's not good. That is not sustainable. So if you can drop that performance and just hang out for a year, a Galaxy S22, a OnePlus 10, hold in place. Don't go running to win the benchmarks. Give us last year's tier of performance. The phone's going to run cooler. It's going to run more consistently. It's going to be more stable. Battery life is going to improve on that. And that's what I want. So I kind of feel like Motorola is kind of the worst company to start this off because they didn't have those experiences in 2021. Their engineers are leapfrogging an entire generation of SoC that was very difficult to develop for, to code for, and to build hardware for. And now they're gonna learn those lessons the hard way. I don't think we're really gonna see what this new SoC generation can do until it's in a Vivo, until it's in an Oppo, until it's in a OnePlus, a Samsung, a Xiaomi. We need to see that as the true, sort of the true reveal of what this stuff can do, and also how it can be refined. We need to see if it can be refined. I want to see what it's like in a Red Magic. What do we do if we put the 8 Gen 1 into a phone with active cooling? Because then we can let it run kind of a little less managed, like let it off its sort of leash a little bit, but it's got a fan that's blowing hot air out of the phone. And Dave Burns absolutely agreed. The performance per watt is completely out of whack. GPU performance per watt isn't as terrible as I thought it was going to be. I mean, I think the 888 was drawing something ridiculous like 8 watts if you could sustain peak GPU performance. This new one, I think, can peak at 9 watts, but it's generating 40% more frames in a game. So if you cut that in half, if you cut the gain in half, you could probably get down under the power draw of the 888. Again, this is like what we're going to be building the entire next generation of products off of is challenging. It's a challenge. So I do just want to scroll back up here real quick. I have to throw a huge thank you, a huge shout out. TK Bay gifting tier one subs to Arthur Lee, to Billy Quizboy, to Ken Not Kanecki, Anod032, and Al Sabakli. Thank you so much, buddy. You're in Vegas. You should be out there having a good time. What are you doing? Thank you for gifting tier one subs on my stream. But I just mean you should be out there having fun, is what I'm saying. So the story of performance has barely started. But I feel like this generation, one of the main things that they're going to be talking about is more like esoteric. AI performance, NPU performance, machine learning, things that we can't really measure as effectively, that I think is going to be the big push. You know, making your camera a little bit smarter, trying to play with some of these new megapixel, super megapixel kinds of camera sensors. That kind of stuff I think is going to be where the benefits are more felt rather than measured. But at some point, we still need to be able to time the performance in an app and see if it improves, I'm very skeptical that phones in 2022 will render video faster. I'm very skeptical that phones in 2022 will mix down audio podcasts faster than phones in 2021. I'm skeptical that they're going to batch process photos noticeably faster. And in fact, they might batch process faster, but then throttle more aggressively, so the entire process takes longer. That's what I'm concerned about. I want to see us at least hold pace. If we just kept in the same tier, it would be better. If we just took 1 year, it's kind of a little bit what Apple did from the A14 to the A15. The A15 is really not a radical departure or a radical improvement on the A14, but it's refined. And it does overall deliver better lifestyle performance for a phone. I need that from Qualcomm. I need that from MediaTek. And I'm hoping to see it with Google. Take an off year and make a big play out of it. We're really going to give you better battery life. We've been listening to you. We're refining this. Your phone's going to be amazing at playing games. It's phenomenal for the camera. But these big benchmark scores don't mean anything. You want better battery. And that's what we're going to give you, a phone that runs cooler. And I swear, I promise you, outside of 10, emotionally whiny YouTube channels, most of the rest of the market's going to go with you on that. The average consumers we're so worried about would much rather hear, hey, we're going to give you better battery life than you. What you need is 10% more CPUs. They don't care. It's so bad. Well, I hate it when they break it down by days. 3 days, 3 day battery life. Not with my use. Well, I mean, like a V60 could definitely give me 2 solid days of dual screen. Not 2 days and 2 nights, but a day, a night, and a day before I'd really need to go in there and top it off. I was getting like 10 hours of screen on time with easily like half that use being dual display. So 2 to 3 apps at a time, 2 full screens. And that V60 just kept running. It was amazing. It's way more important that your phone runs a millisecond faster. Sorry, Matt Tyler had a comment here. It's not going to format right for this, so I'm just going to read it. What is performance to you? Just opening Twitter and Facebook, any good 700 series, editing videos, gaming, running a stream, 800 series. No need to be wanting the latest and greatest when really an 800 series chip can handle most things, right? I edit my videos for the YouTube channel and run my stream from the Xperia 1 Mark II. Absolutely no problems. I mean, like, increasingly, that's the message we've got to get out to our family and friends. So many of my family are now on mid-rangers, and I couldn't be happier. It really is a joy to see, like, Pixel 4As, because that's genuinely what they need, and they're not. My uncle is on a Galaxy S9. You know what phone he just bought to replace his banged up Galaxy S9? He bought another Galaxy S9. I could not have been more proud of him for looking at this. I think he got it for like $150. He's like, the phone's in great condition. The battery's great. I just swapped it out. I mean, yeah, I have my favorite phone again, and it still has a headphone jack. And you're like, yeah, that's the point. That should always be the point. I'm going to get crazy excited about premium tier phones. I think I lost TK's Xiaomi Mi 11 Ultra. I apologize, TK. But, you know, I've got my Pixel, and I've got my OnePlus 9. It was still plugged in. Got my OnePlus 9 Pro. Like, I'm going to be stoked about those. I'm going to be stoked about those because I genuinely do try to drive cameras to their limits, and I edit video from my phones. If you're not at that tier, there aren't good reasons to be shopping at that tier anymore. I mean, it's just intense. Again, a Galaxy S10. Pick up an S10e if you're not really as concerned about the 5Gs. Like, if you're still just kind of rocking mostly LTEs in your neck of the woods, this thing is a monster. This phone is so crazy good. pick up an LG G8. Pick up, I mean, if you can use the South Korean V50 in your area, the LG V50 is just a stunning phone, especially if you can get that dual display going. Just so, so good. And Sentinel 909, exactly. This is exactly why I'm simply going to repair my OnePlus 5T instead of getting a new device. My mom is still on her OnePlus 6T. It's going to be a while before she feels she needs to upgrade. I mean, genuinely, for what she's using, the Snapdragon 845 is overkill. I think the only reason why she might is because she started using the camera a little bit more now that my nephew's born. He's a little baby. She's been going up to visit my sister, and they've been spending more time together. And I think she's starting to feel like her grandmother photos and videos should be a little nicer like mine. That might be the only thing that bumps her up to getting like a newer Pixel. But that's what she's going to get. Like, if she were to buy a phone today, she'd go and get a Pixel 5a. That would be her phone. Not the Pixel 6, not a 6 Pro, not anything over the top. My dad has a 4a, and she likes that his camera's a little bit nicer than her OnePlus 6T. That would be the only thing that could nudge her off of her OnePlus. So, yeah, Dave Burns, I do kind of wish OP would get with a headphone jack. In their nicer phones, like, you could go and grab a Nord. So I have the Nord N10s. I thought the N20s still had headphone jacks. I don't remember. So anyway, wrapping this all up, I'm 7 minutes over, so I feel like we've done this pretty well. I do need to pull up last week's podcast because I just want to show off one thing. So, I left it over there on the table. So this is the new mobile X6 Plus. This is a Verizon branded phone. Last week at the end of the podcast, we talked about how I was going to give this phone away in the United States. The contest, the giveaway details were on somegadgetguy.com. And I want to draw the winner. So here, I've got the podcast. Here's all the intro. The giveaway. For podcast listeners, viewers this week, I've got a new X6 Plus looking for a good home. This is a USA-only giveaway as the phone is carrier-locked to Verizon, and I reviewed it here. To enter this contest, all you have to do is leave a comment on this blog post answering this question. What was the best gift you gave someone this holiday season? So let's go down to the comments. There's only one comment. So Ron Guido wrote, "My wife was happiest with some nice bath bombs of all things." So the nicest gift he got, he gave, was to his wife with a bath bomb. And Ron, you are taking away a new mobile X6 Plus for Verizon. Well, and also just the loveliest of comments. I just emailed Ron, so hopefully he'll get back to me in the next day or so. And next week on the podcast, I got to tease it because I couldn't prepare it for today just with everything going on with New Year's. If you caught my review, I just recently reviewed the Eco Opals, the Eco OH2. I have a wrapped Eco OH2. These are the gold OH2s, phenomenally good earbuds. Next week on the podcast, I'm going to set up another vlog post contest. It's going to be really easy to enter. I'm probably going to ask a wacky question or ask you to share a blog post or something like that on Twitter. This is going to be the giveaway next week. All right. So Ron, I'm super excited. Literally the only person who wanted to participate. So I feel like the phone is going to a good home. That's really the main mission is, I don't want my contests to be swarmed by contest junkies. Like, I don't want to see egg icons on Twitter as I go through like a Gleam link. I don't care about getting those kinds of Twitter followers. That's bad for me, actually. So we're going to start hooking up a few more of these giveaways, and hopefully I can even get to some of these older phones. Like, maybe I have a OnePlus 8 that could use a good home. I can't just give it away if this is the kind of participation I'm going to be getting on giveaways. Not to say I don't like that Ron is winning this. I'm just saying, in general, it's a lot of work to try and set up a good giveaway. TED Talks Tech, no red key 2 to commemorate BlackBerry's death tomorrow. Oh no, My red Key 2, you can pry that from my cold, dead hands. That's a museum phone that I'll be buried with. I'm going to have a double-wide casket for all of my favorite devices. So, yes, next week, Eco giveaway, some really fun stuff to look forward to. I'm going to have some videos out, hopefully one on a scooter. I'm finally getting my hands on some lifestyle tech like scooters. Another earbud review, and then I have some other phone editorials before like we get the onslaught of all of the new next generation phones. I feel like there's some things to talk about outside of like the rambling on this podcast. Muppinish, real quick, will you cover the Android 11 update when it arrives for the Duo 1? I absolutely will. And again, with TK has my Vivo X70 Pro Plus and my Duo 2. I cannot tell you how much I missed those two phones and how even though I've got a Fold 3 over on my desk over there, how I might be kind of going back and picking up my Duo 1 more than I thought I would be. So it's good times. Let's go ahead and cap this now. Geez, guys, the giveaway contest's got real morbid. Yikes. Yeah, let's end this before I have to really worry about policing my live chat here. Everybody, thanks so much for tuning in, for jumping in. Happy New Year. Again, it just means the world to me to start my week off with some familiar faces and some friends and some geeks to really dig into some of this stuff, get back on track, hit this new year hard, find the fun stuff that we want to talk about, and get into those conversations that are a bit more, you know, sort of nerdy into the weeds, because that's the kind of stuff that I like, and I'm happy to have found other people that like that stuff too. I hope everyone's staying safe. If you're traveling to Vegas, if you're covering CES, please, 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 hand sanitizers, double masks, medical grade equipment, take care of yourself, keep your head down, stay safe. No one wants to come away from something like this sick, and especially no one wants to come away from a fun event spreading a sickness. And if we can't look after ourselves, we won't be able to look after others. And that to me is always sort of the tragedy of these types of events when someone just wasn't careful and it impacted someone else. So please take care of yourself, be safe, be well, and have some fun with some cool tech. Because I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe, take care, and I love you all. Catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.